Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Super Sale and get 40% off paints and stains September 19th through the 24th. With prices starting at $29.39, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 803. It's the 16th of June, 2017. On the podcast today, I have Craig Brown, CEO, and CEO and Director Ivor Jones of ECR Minerals, that's ECR ticker, and they talk about the current exploration program in the Victorian goldfields in Australia. Plus, I also have Cameron Parry, CEO of Lions Gold, that's Lion ticker, and Cameron talks about the progress at their current operations. I also have, as is a Friday, Russ Mould, Investment Director at stockbroker AJ Bell, talks about the Greek bailout and the following stocks. Ramsden's, newly floated, doing very well, that's RFX. Watkin Jones, WJG ticker, and Blue Jay Mining, ticker there's J. Plus, today's suggested one for your watchlist is Tomco Energy, T-O-M. Don't forget, anything you hear in this podcast is just information. It is not in any way intended as investment advice. It's been submitted by Capital Blossom, and I go through the reasons why Capital Blossom reckons you should add Tomco Energy to your watchlist in a bit. And as always, I have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 3 days. And Friday has become a bit of a quiet day for RNSs. So rather than top five, we have the top three most liked RNSs on the platform this morning.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Craig Brown, CEO and COO and Director, Ivor Jones of ECR Minerals. Ticker there is ECR. Guys, thank you for joining me.
Thank you, Justin.
Now, Ivor, I just learned you've come in from the field. Are you working on the drilling there down in Australia? Craig, where are you at the moment?
I'm currently in London at the moment.
Okay, so London, Australia. Literally, Craig is literally, Ivor's just hot-footed in from the field there. So thanks for that, Ivor. Before we go any further, guys, for people not aware of ECR, can you just give a brief summary as to what you're all about, please, if you could, Craig?
ECR is an exploration company with three areas with assets. We have three exploration projects in Australia and another one on the way, one of which we've started drilling on at the moment. We have seven licenses in Argentina, and then we have a project we've been involved in the Philippines. And certainly two of the projects we're developing at the moment is Australia, and we're looking further afield to doing a bit more work in Argentina.
Yeah, excellent stuff. Okay, well, let's get into the most recent news, which is, was it yesterday? Yes, the commencement of Australian exploration program. Can you take us through the highlights here, what's happening, and hopefully the potential here?
It's what we've got is a small area which we're prioritising for exploration in our Bayliston project. And there's a an old mine which was a relatively small mine in its day, but it was high grade, and the reason they stopped mining there was not for any reason other than some technical difficulties they were having. The steam engine blew up and the mine flooded, the workings collapsed, and basically sent them broke. So what our philosophy is to go and look into these areas where there's been old workings and test to see if there's anything left or what is left. And also in the old days, the old timers were looking for mineralisation that might have been going somewhere between 10 and 15 grams per tonne as a minimum. Whereas these days we can target quite successfully and quite economically mineralisation down as low as 1 gram to even half a gram per tonne, depending on the size of the operation. So we consider that as a great opportunity for us to go and look and explore for mineralisation or relatively cheap access to mineralisation with the projects we've got. Of course, on top of that, there's some really exciting operations which are close by to us and giving us ideas as to what the potential lies for further exploration. So, yeah, we're very excited about it.
Yeah, and for people not aware, obviously, I mean, you know, location is you know, hugely important when you're exploring, because and I like the fact that there's a mine that's already been drilled, like you say, because I've done some research on the company there, and you are in the world's most prolific gold producing region, pretty much in the Victorian goldfields. So that's unbelievable, because if people are not aware of of grades and all that, 15.5 I think grams per ton they were getting there, that's phenomenal grade, isn't it?
Well, it's good grade. It's really good grade. You know, on today's mining scene, if you've got 15.5 grams per ton in an operation, you're going to be doing okay. You should be able to make really good money with something like that. For us, you know, that we know that there is some mineralization there, because they actually walked away from mineralization that was averaging about 2 to 3 meters thick and about 15.5 grams per ton. We just don't know how much is there and how much is left. So, you know, for us, it's a great opportunity.
Yeah. And what are your hopes here, though? I mean, because, like I said, I know nothing about mining, really, but so what will you be doing? How far will you be going down? How far did the old miners go down? Cause it, was it last drilled? Was it in 1905 or something? Was that the case?
Well, it was mined in 1905. They stopped mining at 91 metres. And as I said before, the power was run by a steam engine. The steam engine ran the pumps, and the steam engine blew up, so the mine flooded. And by the time they got a new steam engine from Melbourne and then pumped the workings out so they could get access back into the old mining areas, the access into the stopes had collapsed, and so they basically lost their opportunity with the operation. For us, we know that when they finished mining, they were mining on average about 2 to 3 meters of ore at about 15.5 grams per ton. So we know that the mineralization at that level was about 2.5 meters and 15.5 grams. It's a relatively small part of the bigger project. The bigger project is a larger area which includes three trends of mineralization. There's a trend called the Maori trend, another one called Scowler's trend, and then there's the Byron trend, where the old Byron shaft was. And our view is that in the project area, the old timers weren't interested in looking at the relatively lower grade part of the population. They were just looking at the very high grade part. Mm. And there is we certainly know that on Maori there was a drilling intersection of about 44 grams per ton over 1 meter, and it wasn't very deep. It was only, I think, it was about 17 metres deep or something like that, or maybe 30 metres, I can't remember, but it wasn't very deep. So we've got a picture of seeing if we can pull it all together into a single project and making something good of it.
Excellent. Okay, and when are you expecting a first set of results from this work?
Well, the first set of the first set of samples went into the laboratory yesterday. Mm-hmm. And by the time we've done our checks to make sure that there's no bias or anything like that, anything nasty crept into the assaying process, I would imagine it'll be a week to 2 weeks before we start to see any results.
Okay. So it's relatively short term. And going back to sort of Craig there on the corporate front, what's an important part of the story at ECI Minerals is that you sort of turned it around and brought it back in focus. And you've also got the bank, you've just raised some money, but you've also got a big Chinese shareholder there. Explain that, Craig, relationship, please. Good?
Yes, we've got a Chinese shareholder who is a distributor of mining equipment, Volvo Mining Equipment in China, and they also have they also run several contractors, and they're certainly interested in assisting us with developing any mines which we can find or develop. As soon as we've got a resource there, they're interested in coming in and assisting us with the mining and the finance to push the company along, and they're certainly interested in financing the company to go further afield. So they're using us. They'd like to partly see if we can assist them to develop some good mining projects and to get them involved in developing those into to operating mines.
Yeah, so how did that come about, Craig, that relationship? What happened there?
Well, I've been working with China for a number of years. In the last company, Chrysler Resources, we brought a Chinese company on board, and they developed a fairly substantial mine, and they put over $270 million into the mine. So certainly they have it's through those contacts that I've come across this group, and we've been introduced.
Excellent stuff. Okay, and aside from what's going on now, the work programme there in Byron, what else is happening, and what can we expect in the way of news?
Well, in addition, in Australia, we also have the Timor license, which we obtained earlier this year, and certainly that was just simply applied for and obtained, and certainly there's a lot of work to do there. And there's the old Leviathan mine, which was quite a substantial mine in Victoria, and our next target will be working around Leviathan and looking for some to do some drilling there. Would that be correct, Ivor? Can I also say that on the Byron mine, apart from the actual historical mining, there's also been quite a lot of soil samples taken, over 300 in the last year or so, and so we do actually have a grade on from soil samples, and also some what we call ditch switching, which is a small type of trenching on surface. So we do have some samples from that as well. So we do, apart from the high grade mineralization underneath, we also have grades running through the entire property of disseminated gold mineralization.
Yeah, and so in your head, Craig, what's your hope here? In the next few months, what do you hope to achieve here?
Well, we hope to get some positive drilling results, and then we can plan a next drilling stage and then take it into a resource. But it all depends upon what the initial results come out at. But we're quite hopeful. As we said, there's a number of other successful mines operating around the area. One is Costerfield, the other one's Fosterville. Fosterville had some great results recently, running into the they were getting over 300 grams per tonne on some of their drill intercepts over 16 metres. So, if we can encounter mineralisation like that, we'll certainly be off. But, we're certainly in the right zone for it. I mean, the Fosterville mine's less than 20 kilometres away from our property.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Marvellous. All right. Well, if anyone's listening right now, Craig, and they like the sound of what you're doing and the news coming up, but they're not following you yet on Vox Markets, give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button, please.
Well, because we're currently drilling in Australia, we've got we're very excited. We're going to have near-term results coming through, drilling results, and we're very excited about how positive those results could be. We're fully funded for the foreseeable future, so certainly we have. We're not coming back to the market to get more cash, and we have a strong management team focused on getting results.
Guys, it's good to chat to you. Thanks for coming on. And like I said, in the next few weeks or a couple of months, or even we'll have results out from this. We'll know what it looks like. So listen, come back on and update the market when that comes on. Thanks very much, guys.
Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Cameron Parry, Chief Executive Officer at Lions Gold. That's Lion Ticker. It's a good ticker there. Cameron, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Justin. Thanks very much.
Yeah, well, so I've noticed a bit of heat, a bit of noise being talked about Lions Gold on social media. So, Cameron, I know you're sort of relatively new. Can you explain or summarise the business, please?
Yeah, Lions Gold's relatively new. We only changed the name back in February last year, and I joined the board with my fellow executive director back at the end of July last year. I should say Lions Gold changed its name to Lions Gold in February this year, 2017. So that's all relatively new. I'm not new to building, mining and exploration companies on AIM, of course, coming from the background of creating Metal Tiger and running that as CEO for the best part of its first 2 years. And that's been a great success story on the market. Lions Gold itself, we're a gold-focused exploration company with assets in India and Finland, and we're a significant shareholder of a physical gold ownership online exchange. And so what that means is that we've got basically we've got 20.5% holding in India's largest private gold exploration portfolio or company that has this portfolio, covering about 900 odd square kilometres, and there's three dozen prospecting licenses and application, and mining licenses and application. They also have one mining license, and that's for a project that's their most advanced, that they're looking to bring online as India's first privately owned gold producing mine by the end of next year, end of 2018. So that's probably what the market's waiting for, the punchiest thing next coming in the Lions Gold story. But in Finland, we've got projects there covering about 24 square kilometres. We're in a fortunate position where we believe we can conduct a bulk sampling campaign to extract thousands of tonnes of ore during the second half of this year. And then, we're organising production of that ore so that we can then have refined gold or the cash sitting in a privately held Finnish JV company, by the end of the year, which sort of makes that a self-sustaining exploration project in itself, and it has a lot of upside, and it's all very, we've got some great deposits there with high-grade gold that we're aware of. And then the online trading platform side of it is, that's almost like a mine-to-market kind of aspect to the company. Mm-hmm. And what that allows people to do is actually utilise gold in a, as they would cash. So at the moment, it's an online product where you have direct ownership of your gold. It's bolted somewhere. You can choose London, Geneva, or Singapore, or you can pick silver, and we store that in Hong Kong. It's a custodial service, but because there is this trading platform element, it's as easy as having any other. It's the equivalent of having an online bank account, but this bank account, instead of being measured in cash, it's actually measured in gold, and it's physical gold that sits somewhere that if you wanted, you could take possession of course, but that slightly defeats the convenient use of it digitally. And there's a lot of scope for products that we can release there as well. So I guess, in a nutshell, as I say, we're a gold-focused exploration company with assets in India and Finland, and we have a financial technology division to the company.
Yeah, that's interesting. So it's all focused around gold, essentially. But like I said, you've got this fintech trading side of it, which is very interesting. It seems. Do you know what? It's almost because you're involved with Metal Tiger. I remember having Paul Johnson on and saying to him quite a few times when they were some sort of around about 2 million, 2.5 million, 3 million market cap, saying you've got a lot going on there for a small market cap. And I feel I'm saying the same to you now. So let's go through. So the gold ownership platform went live on the 16th of May. How does that work? So what? Can anyone just log in, like you say?
So it's a new brand that we've developed. Index Gold is the brand, but indexgold.com is where they can go. Check it out. You're buying gold at the spot price. You set up an account. You obviously, there are some AML, anti-money laundering, and KYC, know your client, forms and ID details that need to be provided, as with any account. You can come in and out of cash as you choose. You can hold the gold. You can, can sit on the gold. But gold is such a liquid asset. It is cash like. As I say, you can just come in and out of cash very easily. So it's the third largest traded market in the world behind U.S. debt and Japanese debt. But you're holding part of your family's wealth in something that's very tangible, very real. It is a traditional store of value. It is a traditional means of exchange. So, I think all of us kind of worry, particularly in the last few years and since the global financial crisis in 2008, that you know, we see a lot of quantitative easing, a lot of cash going into the system, and obviously that's got to reduce the value of your purchasing power. So if there's a way of having something with the ease of use and as easy to bring into cash as you know, as cash is, if you have that, but you can then protect your family's wealth by having it against something, like basically being 100% gold-backed or silver, which is the other option, but gold-backed, that's a very appealing. We believe there's, you know, the market's really warming up for that type of thing. I think it's been warm for a while, but I think it's heating up more and more, and demand for that kind of product. And we're looking to bring some other products around that, you know, later this year as well. So that's a very exciting thing. I also, apart from sort of creating Metal Tiger and bringing that to market, being CEO of that for its first almost 2 years, and as you were saying, where you were speaking to Paul, where we were just building up, you're just putting together these building blocks of value and building value and making decisions that you think are the right decisions, and to build that value for shareholders. And the market doesn't, I probably necessarily really care about you too much because you're just a micro cap AIM company, so it's not like you pay HP, but eventually you build up so much pressure of this value that, yeah, then it does go. And that's kind of the model, you know, make good decisions, buy well, when capital is hard to come by, as it still is in natural resources, then the bargains are out there, you know, put together smart deals, and you know, build this, if you like, it's like a champagne cork or something, you know, and then when it pops, sort of the more value that's compressed in there before it goes, then the further it sort of shoots up, I guess. But I mean, everything we do, we want, you know, we don't just want a, like a spiky share price moving about. We want something that continues to re-rate again and again and again and is sustainable at those re-rated positions.
Okay, cool. And so let's move on quickly to, because you mentioned the Indian part of the business there. So what's next as far as, you know, production is concerned, or is it Finland, is it?
Well, Finland, we've got, just to touch on Finland, because that's a smaller play, if you like, than the size and scope of what we've got in India. So Finland, we've got licenses for about 24 square kilometres. We've got some highly prospective, high-grade gold deposits known to us. They're not JORC, they're not at JORC compliant level, but to the extent that management is comfortable, you know, we're at that level. We are looking to conduct a bulk sampling campaign later this year, which will see us produce only a few thousand tons, not tens of thousands, but certainly a few thousand tons, and produce a couple of thousand ounces of gold from that ultimately. And we're setting up for that now. There's preparation going on. We're working. We've only got, you know, the other JV partner there that's known to me from my Metal Tiger days. And that's, if you like, it's a bit of a dig and truck operation this year, but that's kind of fantastic because you get to the end of this year and our target is to sort of have in round figures about, you know, $2 million plus worth of either, you know, refined gold or cash. And then that JV vehicle is a self-sustaining exploration vehicle with assets in Finland, options on other assets in Finland. And so you don't sort of have these, we've got three divisions in the company, but we don't like have these three cash flow drains. Mm-hmm. Same thing with Index Gold. It is a revenue generative product. And whilst we may choose to fast track some of its marketing objectives or release of products, you know, it doesn't take much to make that self-sustaining as well. So I suppose that brings me onto India then. And this is historically where the company sort of had interests. And so I didn't sort of put this into the company, myself and my other executive director, but we didn't know whether there was much value in this when we sort of got involved and raised some money and took sort of control of management there and set Lions Gold on the path that it's currently on. And we're really pleased to find out that they're great partners over there in India. There's tremendous value, which is generally undervalued. I think also India, there's a market perception of, you know, risk there that's probably moving away from what the actual risk is, which is diminishing a lot, particularly over the last couple of years, and I'm sure it will continue to over the next few years. And of course, India is such a massive market. So if you've got a reason for being in there, and it's not going to take, you know, you're not going to have to spend decades to sort of realize an outcome. You know, it is really, it's the Indian market's just huge, and it's one of the last biggest, almost untouched markets there are. So to be involved there is great. To be involved in gold is even better. India as a country consumes, or its population consumes, about 800 tonnes of gold a year. They only produce about 3 tonnes. So if you've got a gold producing gold mine there, then you don't really have to look very far to where your customers are.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I suppose that's our most immediate thing now coming up in India. Our most advanced project is called Jonagiri. We've got a mining license. So we own 20.5% of GMI Soil Services India. They own Jonagiri, where they've got a mining license, a 30-year mining license to do 365,000 tonnes of gold ore per year. At the moment, as it stands, we've got a JORC-compliant resource there of 361,000 ounces of gold, of which 214,000 is in the indicated category. So that's what the feasibility study is being done on at the moment. We expect to have the results of the feasibility study with us at the end of June, so we should be able to release that's the latest timeline we're looking at. We should be able to release that to the market, if not the end of this month, at the very very start of July. Yeah, so that's probably the most, as I said, the most advanced project that the market's paying attention to. But the fact that the independent valuation report came out on the rest of the portfolio, which is in a way not our core focus or our immediate focus right now, but even that came out with an expected value of $8 million for GMI Soil's portfolio in that area, and that had nothing to do with Jonagiri or the surrounding exploration area at Jonagiri. So there's a lot of value there. We have, as I say, 20.5% of that company. So if in simple terms, I guess a fifth of all GMI Soil's value is attributable to us at Lions Gold. But yeah, we've just got a lot on, got to keep building that value, and eventually, you just keep delivering. And eventually, as I say, it's almost like this pressure builds up. And eventually, I believe we'll re-rate. And my feeling is we will achieve that, during the course of this year, just with because every element that we've put together in Lions Gold, we will roll out and be able to evidence why these are, hopefully smart decisions.
Okay, excellent stuff. Well, listen, Cameron, if someone's listening to this and they see that you're undervalued, and you recently did a placing actually at 1.1 pence, which wasn't any discount, which is, I suppose, nice for shareholders, because it's unusual for a small cap to do that. You raised 550,000, so before expenses. But if anyone's listening and they like the sound of what they hear, but they're not following you on Vox Markets, give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button, please, Cameron.
First of all, as you say, we just raised at 1.1p, which is no discount to market. I mean, as a board, we defend our shareholders. We don't just, we do welcome new shareholders, but we don't welcome them at the, with open arms at some heavy discounted price, and anything to harm our current shareholders. So we welcome new shareholders, but not to the detriment of our current shareholders. I participated in that, so I took 3 million shares in that, about 6%, I think, of the placing. With that was a 1-for-2 free attaching warrant. So myself and the others who participated, we now have a warrant that's exercisable at 1.5p, and it has to be exercised on or before the 15th of December this year. So a six-month warrant is also quite an unusual thing if you're going to put a warrant out with a share. And I think that really, and that was because we have a lot coming up. There's a lot of news flow that the market is aware that is coming. And this is the period where I think we, in my humble opinion, where a re-rate should follow. I can't give you the exact time, obviously. Nobody can, but I think we will we'll see a significant uplift in our market cap, in this next six-month period. Again, the second point, I suppose, is that our market cap, I believe, is low. I'm not sure how many, how many CEOs of public listed companies would say otherwise. So, obviously you have to take that with a pinch of salt. But I do think what we've built in Lions Gold and what we're going to be able to evidence shortly, you know, time will tell, but I believe we are, you know, at a low valuation at the moment, and that's fine, but we just haven't taken off yet. Very imminently we've got the John Aguirre economic feasibility study to be complete, which will give us a net present value for that project. That'll take us to a decision to mine. If we choose to proceed, which we have a high level of confidence we will, but of course we'll wait and see what the final results of the EFS are, then we may be able to sort out a mine development and operator contract where you can absorb, or where a third party actually absorbs most of the capex. And so even if you've got a nice project that's economic to go and develop a mine on, obviously funding of that can then slow down. You know, that progress, and we think there's a decent chance that we'll be able to sort something out on that front, so that it's you know, we're not incurring delays of 6 months trying to finance something. And if we can not incur any extensive delays, we're a good chance of seeing that get into production by the end of next year. So that's extremely exciting as well, because obviously that's something that can go on for, you know, for a decade plus of producing gold, so we've got the exploration right through to the actual mine development and production side of things in the company.
Excellent, Cameron. Listen, it's good to chat to you. And like you said, you've got lots of things going on in the next, next 3 to 6 months. So hopefully we will chat again and update the market on that. Thanks very much, Vanessa. Speak
Excellent.
Soon.
Excellent. Thanks a lot, Justin. Bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Russ Mould, Investment Director at Stockbroker AJ Bell. You all right, Russ?
I'm very well, Justin. How are you?
Yes, I'm good. And listen, I want to tap into your macro knowledge as well today.
We're
going to cover three stocks, but I was interested to see, a while back we had this Greek deal all signed, sealed, delivered, apparently, then it fell through, and now it's signed again now. And is it 8.5 billion euros, I think?
Thereabouts, that's correct. Yeah.
But I did hear you on another broadcasting channel, and you came up with some cracking stats on this, and the ability of Greece to pay it back, or they can't cope, essentially, can they?
No, I mean, Greece's debts, and it's very hard to find real numbers, but you can actually, if you Google Greek debt clock, you will actually find some figures on there. And you can do it for the UK and all sorts of other countries. But looking at the numbers from the IMF, the World Bank, and sort of tallying those around, it looks as if Greek national debt is around 340 to 350 billion euros. That's about 180% of GDP. And it means that their annual interest payment is about 18 billion euros, or 5% of GDP. So the economy has got to grow at 5% a year just to cover the interest bill. Now, Greece has been in a recession for the last, 3, 4, 5, 6 years, as it's been going through this wicked austerity program to try and rein its spending in. So there are two possible solutions, one of which is you wag your finger at the Greeks and say, look, you lot, work harder, pay more tax and behave yourselves and get on with it, okay? Or you go down the other path, which is, look, well, debt relief, and say, okay, look, you guys, you know, there's nobody can take any pride in 23% Greek unemployment or youth unemployment more than 40%. The country's been run into the ground by its debt. Now, you can say that the wound is self-inflicted, but if you've lent money to Greece, I think you're going to do really pretty well to get your money back. Now, nobody at the moment, though, wants to really go through this process of giving the Greeks the debt relief, because it's politically unpalatable, particularly in the north of Europe, particularly in Germany, where there's a small matter of the German election coming up in the autumn. So this solution to open up the next tranche of the 86 billion euro Greek bailout is perfect. It means that the European Union and the European Commission give Greece 8.5 billion euros. Mm-hmm. The Greeks promptly give them 7 billion euros straight back in July as part of a payment on the old bailout. And then the whole thing's kicked into the long grass until 2018, after the German election, when again the issue of how do we get Greece out of this mess is going to be discussed again.
Yeah.
The International Monetary Fund is pressing the case for debt relief. Maybe that there will be delays on repayments of debt, of interest on old debts of up to 10 or 15 years, which you could say was a quasi-default if you're being a bit of a bond vigilante. But what it's doing is it is, again, extending and pretending. It's pushing the problem out by another year, but in the end, the issue is deep, that the Greek economy has got its clear faults, in that tax collection isn't great, productivity isn't high. In the old days, it would have just devalued the drachma, and, you know, attracted tourism by becoming cheaper. And what exports it's got there, it would have made them more competitive. And that would also have been a backwards way around way of defaulting on the debt by paying in devalued drachma. Well, it can't do that because it's part of the euro. It's locked into the euro now. But so the old way out isn't there. Growing its way out of it looks to be a phenomenal task, even if you took the German view that they do have to pull their socks up and work, you know, and pay more tax and behave themselves. So debt relief, to me, ultimately looks to be the only way in which you're going to solve that particular economy's terrible problems, which are as much social problems now as they are political ones. And that's really why at some stage there's going to have to, I think, be some movement.
Yeah, because, I mean, like you said, unemployment there. What's it at there? At certain
22-23%, I think.
Yeah, that's nuts. And just think, what's ours at the moment? About four points?
Four and bits. Yeah. I mean, this is where, you know, if you, you know, and this isn't to take sides at all, if you were a leaver, you know, you would say that the European Union hasn't worked because, you know, European Union unemployment is now down to 9.7% across the whole community. That is higher than the UK peaked at during the great financial crisis. Mm. So you can still say that, you know, Europe has got an awful lot of work to do in terms of becoming more efficient, more productive, less rigid in its labour markets, more flexible in its approach. And that's why I think a lot of leavers will look at those statistics and go, well, look, you know, this is one of the reasons why we don't going to get locked in to some of the regulatory issues that we don't like. But equally, the European economy does seem to be improving. It's got a bit of traction, helped by a weaker euro, certainly, helped by the German powerhouse, definitely. But Spain has gone through a huge internal devaluation and has come out the other end of an austerity program. Portugal and Ireland are doing pretty much the same. Greece and Italy are still probably the problem children, to be fair, with France somewhere in the middle. And clearly the market is currently of the view that Monsieur Macron and his En Marche République en Marche party is capable of getting some economic and social reforms through and get France going again. You know, don't forget, France hasn't balanced its budget since the year I was born, which regrettably was 1969. So even then, you know, the French economy has got some work to do if it's to persuade people that lending it money at barely 1% on a 10-year view is a sensible thing to do, which I'm, you know, I think is a pretty brave call, frankly.
Yeah, well, what a mess. Let's get into individual stocks and
something a little bit more little bit more predictable, hopefully. Anyway,
yeah.
So
you never know.
You never know.
So what's your first there, Russ?
So the first one is Ramsden's, which is RFX. It's AIM quoted. It's a relative newbie. It only floated back in February when the company raised about £16 million. It's a Middlesbrough headquartered pawnbroker.
Pawnbroking,
you know, I guess there's a certain stigma attached to the industry anyway, but from an investment point of view, there certainly is, because of the disaster that was Albemarle and Bond that you may remember, which turned up its toes and went into administration. Ironically, a pawnbroker going bust in 2014. Now, that was because the company massively expanded its gold operations and got stuck with an awful lot of the precious metal just as the gold price went firmly into reverse gear from the 2013 peak of around $900 an ounce. Now, that's still a risk with Ramsden's. About a fifth of its gross profits come from precious metal sales, but it is in other areas. A third actually comes from currency, for example. And because of things like the Albemarle and Bond disaster, and because the UK economy overall has actually hung in pretty tough, helped by record low interest rates, which has taken some of the pressure off people's borrowings, you're actually seeing consolidation in the industry and some people packing up. I mean, Ramsden's itself acquired a few sites from a firm called Check Center last year. The good thing about Ramsden's is it's been around since the 1970s. It's seen an awful lot of cycles, so it's probably not going to do anything daft, led by a chap called Peter Kenyon, who I believe is not the same guy who was the chief executive at Chelsea Football Club. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and if you do think that the UK economy is coming into a bit of a sticky patch, either because the up cycle is very long in the tooth, or because, heaven forfend, the Bank of England might actually get round to raising interest rates at some stage in the next 3 years, or because you just think there's too much debt in the system, which, you know, with consumer credit debt at 1.2 trillion and rising, you can definitely argue. Pawnbroking's probably a bit of a hedge against those. And what you do have is a well-run company, decent balance sheet, on 11 times earnings with a dividend yield more than 4%. And other shares have done extremely well since float. They've gone from 86p to 145. But if you have a nervous disposition about the UK economy, it's the kind of stock that you might be looking at, particularly given that dividend yield.
Yeah, yeah. Couldn't Albemarle just gone to another pawnbroker's and say, you know, how much for our pawnbrokers?
I don't know what happened to their shops. I'd assume that a few were eventually picked up by maybe H&T or some of the other guys out there, but I should probably look at that. But yeah, I think it was their gold pop-up shops that really did them in, and would left them overextended. And again, the balance sheet just got overextended. And that's, you know, as we know with many a company, it's always the balance sheet that, you know, it always looks perfectly adequate until push comes to shove, and then you suddenly find out that actually there's a lot less room for manoeuvring. And, you know, people always say to me, well, how can a company go bust if it's got cash on the balance sheet and it's making a profit? But it's because they haven't got enough cash and they're not making enough of a profit to cover the bills, like interest and the good old tax man, and they're the ones that have ultimately trip you up.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, Ramsden's, by the way, the share price is flying since IPO, isn't it? 16th of...
It has, it's gone incredibly well, yeah. I'm just sorry I didn't mention it earlier, frankly.
90 pence, it started off at just at the back end of February, now it's 147, so... Yeah. Okay, so what's next, Russ?
And then just a couple of updates on things that we've looked at previously. The first one is Watkins Jones. Yep. I think it was about the first one that we looked at together back in February, when that's done well from sort of 150 to about 185 since.
Yeah.
Remember, it's a developer and constructor of substantial accommodation sites, which I appreciate, you know, this week is a particularly, you know, difficult topic given what's happened in that tower block in West London. Watkins Jones's focus is particularly student accommodation, and I think what's just caught my eye is that this week the company's announced the forward sale of six developments for £165 million. That's nearly 1,700 student beds, 14 residential sites. That's Aberdeen, Sheffield, Newcastle, Bath, Bournemouth and Oxford. So they've now actually forward sold all of the developments that they're due to complete by the end of September 2018, and a couple for the year to September 2019. So there's good forward visibility there. There's obviously cash in the bank now, or even more cash in the bank than there was previously, so they can start looking out at new sites and new developments. The first half numbers back in the start of June were pretty good, with pre-tax profit up 27%, the dividend up 10%, and you've still got, for all of that, a stock on 13 times forward earnings with a yield of 3.5%. Again, the yield's not as big as it was because the shares have done very, very well over the last 6 to 12 months, but the yield looks well underpinned by earnings and by the balance sheet. And although there is this nagging Brexit issue in the background, that if the immigration controls are put on, what will that mean to student numbers? That's something that we do need to keep an eye on. At the moment, at least, the company's got good forward sales, good visibility, and it all seems to be, you know, all systems go for the moment.
Excellent stuff. And what's your final stock there, Russ?
Just a quickie on Blue Jay Mining, JAYA, which we've talked about before. I know the stock's gone like a rocket, and it just caught my eye that a big backer of the stock, the Aussie nickel producer Western Areas, has actually sold a near 19% stake in the company. So I guess you can look at that two ways. One, if they've been in it for such a long time, well, why on earth are they bailing out now? Or two, well, blimey, O'Reilly, look at that. A 19% stake in the company disappeared, snapped up instantly, share price never flinched. So you could look at it as a negative, you could look at it as a positive. I guess in the end, Western Areas is in nickel. It's not in mineral sands, which is Blue Jay's area of expertise. And you know, Western Sands is an Aussie company, probably isn't that bothered about being exposed to Greenland in the long run either, which is where Blue Jay is operating. Remember, Blue Jay is a big potential player on ilmenite, rutile and zircon mineral sands that are used to provide colours in things like paints and plastics. The early signs are, as I know you've discussed this with the management team a lot, haven't you, that the early signs are the grades are potentially extremely high. But in the end, for any risk-averse investor, I think the message is think once, think twice, then probably don't bother, because there's a long way to go here. Feasibility study, apply for an exploitation license, provide a bulk sample, sign up offtake agreements, and then go to commercial production, which can only happen for 7 months a year anyway because of Greenland's weather. So there's a lot of news to come, potentially that's good, that very clear timeline of what needs to happen. For hole digging fans, they'll be very excited by the grades, they'll be looking forward to that. For risk-averse investors who are looking for cash flow right now or a yield right now, they clearly aren't going to play it because there could be many slips twixt cup and lip as we go through that timeline of stages. So it's very much one for the for ones who are prepared to speculate, to accumulate. Anybody of a more cautious disposition will probably say, well, all very interesting. But frankly, if the grades are that good, I can prepare to wait until the end of that timeline, watch commercial production start, because there'll still be lots of gravy left for me if it really is that good.
Yeah, I fancy a T-shirt with the title, Hole Digging Fan. I quite like that.
Diggers and drillers. I'm yeah, a digger and a driller.
Digger and driller fan, yeah. Excellent, Russ. Well, listen, thanks for that.
It's have a pleasure.
Nice have a nice weekend. Thank you. Speak next week.
I look forward to it. Take care now.
All right, it's time for today's suggested one for your watch list. It is Tomco Energy. Just information, not intended as investment advice. Submitted by Capital Blossom. And by all means, if you think you know of a stock that should be on other people's watch lists, submit it. Just go on the link there, at the, go to the blog, which is voxmarkets.co.uk/blog. And click on one of my posts there, and you'll see a link at the bottom that says, do you know of a company that you think should be on other people's watch lists? Then click here, submit it, and I could be featuring it on a future podcast. Okay, submitted by Capital Blossom, as I said. What does the company do? Tomco Energy is a UK-based company quoted on the AIM market of the London Stock Exchange. The company is focused on the development of its substantial 100% owned shale assets located in the prospective Green River Formation in the US state of Utah. Tomco owns two leases that comprise of five blocks that cover 2,990 acres on the company's main block, Holiday, an independent natural resources consultant, has declared a surface mineable JORC compliant measured resource of 126 million barrels. Tomco holds significant 40% stake in Turbo Shale. Mr. Chris Brown of Kenglo One has been heavily invested in Tomco for many years and has decided to step in as CEO to sort things out, or should I say, replicate the success as he did with London Mining. Tomco have strategic stake of 5% of Redleaf, whom incidentally have about $100 million of cash in the bank with no debt, as Total terminated the JV. Tomco has access to all Redleaf's blueprints, their proven eco-shale technology, which converts oil shale to oil. Redleaf are improving the technology to make it viable at a lower oil price. Tomco can wait till Redleaf are successful, then can use eco-shale technology for their own block at zero cost. Donald Trump is keen on mandating the production of oil shale in the United States, and for the record, Utah is full of oil shale. Tomco is turning oil shale into oil and has the potential to reach a market cap of 23 million. That's quite precise there. How do you know that? Anyway, okay. So, share price is 9 pence. Market cap, 2 million. Shares in issue, 22.6 million. What revenue and profit loss does the company generate? For the financial year ended 30th of September 2016, revenue is nothing. Loss for the year is 5.1 million. How much cash and debt does the company have? For the financial year ended 30th of September 2016, cash was £381,000. Yeah, it is pounds there. No debt, but it looks. They did have a convertible loan, which was converted by the CEO. List three reasons why someone should add them to their watch list. Number one, small cap of 2 million can easily double and a possible takeover target in Utah. Reason two, turbo shale proven technology late 1980s, probably modified to 21st century standards. And reason three, Chris Brown of London Mining owns a significant share of Tomco. So that's Tomco Energy, T-O-M. Thank you for submitting that, Capital Blossom. Like I said, by all means, if you know of a stock that you think should be on other people's watch lists, get involved. All right, top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, URU Metals, ticker URU. At four, Andalas Energy and Power, ADL. At three, Ascent Resources, AST. At two, SDX Energy, that's SDX. And at one, Great Western Mining Corporation, GWMO, for three, is that three or four days on the trot? Wow. Okay, here's top three most liked RNSs on Vox Markets this morning. At three, Red Leopard Holdings, RLH subscription. At two, 88 Energy, that's issue of equity. And number one most liked RNS in the last 24 hours on Vox was from Premier African Minerals. And I chatted to George Roach yesterday, and they've released excellent metallurgical test results on Zulu. And that's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.